A shift in network engineering has been a refocusing from plumbing to purpose. In other words, it's not about the pipes as much as it is about the applications going through those pipes. Now, some could rightly argue that the correct focus has always been on delivering business value and therefore holistic IT, but reality is that networking has tended to hunker down in our private little sandboxes, not play with the other kids too much. Okay, SDN and NFV are among the technologies reflecting a change in attitude back towards the application. So with software-defined networking, we have the potential to automate the configuration of network infrastructure. With network functions virtualization, we can instantiate instances of network services like routers, firewalls, or load balancers on demand to meet specific application needs. All of this requires careful coordination with the rest of the data center infrastructure, virtual machines, hypervisors, and storage. Okay, today on the Packet Pushers Weekly, we are going to talk about the shift back to application centricity with Kemp Technologies, today's sponsor. And before we get into this conversation, we should stop and introduce our guests. And first up is Jason Dover. Jason, would you introduce yourself to the Packet Pushers audience?
Sure thing, and thanks a lot, Ethan. My name is Jason Dover. I'm Director of Product Line Management here at Kemp Technologies, really focusing on the direction of our products, making sure that we're satisfying the needs of our customers.
Very good. And we also have from Kemp, Michael Warland.
Hey, thanks, Ethan. I'm Michael Warland. I'm the technical director for the Emerging Technologies Group. So kind of focusing on what's coming.
Okay. So Kemp, I know you guys just a teeny tiny bit because back in the day, a company used to do some work for had a Kemp load balancer. There it was. There was a pair of them in an active standby configuration in my rack. And I did a little bit of load balancing work with them. And that's like all I know about Kemp. So treat me like the ignorant person that I am and fill us in. What all is Kemp about? What kind of products do you guys sell, et cetera?
Sure thing, Ethan. You know, that's a common scenario because normally you just don't have to work on the products that much because, like you said, once you install them, they just tend to work. So we'll give you kind of a background on what we do and where we've come from. Kemp was established back in about 2003. And when we first came into existence, our focus was two things. One, we wanted to have a product that was easy to use. And second, we wanted to have a product that was value-driven, right? At that time, you had two ends of the spectrum, basically. You had some open-source, software-based load balancing and application delivery solutions, but those were really targeted on low-capacity environments, and it didn't have that mature features. On the other hand, you had expensive and proprietary hardware-based solutions.
Yeah, we know who you mean. Yeah. Keep going.
Exactly. They relied heavily on custom ASICs and FPGAs and silicon. We said, well, is there a way for us to take our own custom proprietary Layer 7 magic, combine that with some elements from the open source world, but just leverage common off-the-shelf x86 architecture and deliver something that was value-based, but had the type of features and could scale to meet customer needs. And that's kind of how we got started. So with that, we obviously did very well in the federal space, the commercial space, anywhere where there was sensitivity to price, but a need for mature features. As we've kind of continued, we've seen some interesting trends. One of the biggest trends is that we've actually been having an increase in our virtualization and software sales, which is obviously part of what we're talking about today. Because of the way that we built the company, it's worked out very well for us. Our core capabilities, our core functionality is very loosely coupled to the hardware that we're running on. That allows us to have bare metal solutions where you can take a specialized version of our operating system and deploy that on your own hardware from Fujitsu, Dell, Cisco, etc. Or you can run it in the cloud or in virtual platforms of your choice.
Okay, so by it, do you mean, now again, I'm thinking ADCs, load balancers. Is that all we're talking about here, or do you have other products as well?
We focus primarily at this point on application delivery. So that obviously includes a number of different elements that today are part of a singular product, right? So in an application delivery controller, you have elements for security. So as an example, we have web application firewall, we have IPS, we have IDS, you have global site load balancing if you're trying to load balance a hybrid infrastructure or disperse data centers. But we are starting to develop additional technologies that we're going to dive into a bit later in the discussion as well.
Okay, so then your main competitors in my mind would be, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the folks at F5, Citrix with the NetScaler product, A10, that about right, who you tend to run into?
Absolutely. On the traditional side, those definitely are some of our core competitors. F5 and Citrix primarily dominate this market today, owning the majority of it. So we definitely run up against them a lot. F5 is far more network-centric in focus. So we find a lot of times where they're selling to the network team in a company, we're in that same dealer opportunity, but we're coming in through working with the application team. For Citrix, they obviously get a lot of pull through because of their application virtualization and VDI solution as well. But we're starting to see some other trends, namely in the cloud, right? I mean, today, AWS is the fourth largest EDC vendor when you look at revenue, because customers are starting to adopt cloud more into their infrastructures. And there's also some born-in-the-cloud vendors, the likes of Apcito and Avi Networks, that we're also starting to see get some traction in the market as well.
What product set do we want to focus on for today's conversation?
We're going to focus on our application delivery technology, but what we want to dive into is how we're using that technology to leverage such paradigms as SDN and NFV to get the most value out of your application infrastructure.
Okay, let me ask a question here. You're talking about running it on an x86 server. So good parts, I can go and choose any x86 server that's part of my normal strategy. So if I'm a Dell shop or a HP or a UCS shop, whatever it is, I can run your platform on that bare metal, correct?
You got it.
I can also run it on a hypervisor.
That's correct. It.
So most load balancers for the last 20 years, you've got to have magic sauce inside in the form of silicon, which we can charge you a hell of a lot of money for. What am I losing if I lose that ASIC?
Well, there definitely is a level of determinism of having the ASIC, right? Because that's going to then be dedicated to certain functions. As an example, SSL handshaking and processing. If you don't have the ASIC, well, then you're relying on that core processor to deal with all of the functions that are CPU intensive, SSL or TLS today being one of them. So the value you get out of having a dedicated ASIC is that level of determinism, because you have a set of functionality that's offloaded from the core processor to that dedicated coprocessor. So when you're sizing an appliance for load balancing sans ASIC, you just have to make sure that you have enough CPU power to handle the application requirements. Now, fortunately, with the latest developments that you have from Intel, with the latest chipsets and so forth, this is becoming less of a problem because there's servers that are available that can handle far more
capacity.
So there's
enough CPU power to handle more than what you want.
So another thing, yeah, along with the evolution of the Intel platforms and some of the interesting stuff that they're doing, and by the way, we're working pretty closely with them on this as well. So we are Intel partners, and we're working with them on chipsets and things like OpenSSL and that sort of stuff. But really, the deployment model is transitioning a bit as well, which is interesting. So when you look at the traditional ASIC-based products, what was one of the reasons that they were doing so much in hardware? Because they were doing a single box solution, right, or maybe an HA solution, where they were basically pushing all of their traffic through that piece of hardware. Very,
so you had
very
to scale. You had to be able to crank up a ton of connections per second through this beast.
Absolutely. Yeah. But what we're seeing now is we're seeing that environment shift. We're seeing more application-centric VIPs, or virtual interfaces, which is the interface that represents that set of services that are behind that ADC. So with that shift, where you're starting to go application-centric, or you're starting to go tenant-centric, the need for that big, beefy, huge box is diminishing in a lot of environments. Now, you may still have that as a front-end, maybe a layer 4 accelerator, but to really do that back-end application delivery and the intelligence that you want to pull out of that, extract from that, is actually being done on more of a myopic approach now.
Since you mentioned Intel and working with them, is DPDK particularly interesting to Kemp?
DPDK is interesting. There's a couple of, shortcomings with it, that it's not super cohesive with our platform, mainly because we've done a lot of work over the years in accelerating things in kernel. which is another reason that we're able to compete with a lot of the hardware-based platforms on performance. So we've done, it's interesting because I hear now when I talk to Linux experts out there, I start to hear everybody kind of coming back in to the fold and stating that, you know what, it is good to do a lot in kernel. Whereas there was a period there where everybody said, ooh, avoid kernel, do only the minimal in kernel and push everything into user space. Now we're starting to see a little bit of a transition there where we're starting to see a little bit more focus on being able to accelerate things in kernel. We're years ahead of that because that's how we started the platform. So a lot of customizations in kernel. But, you know, that comes at a bit of a cost in that DPDK is one thing that that's a little bit heavier a lift to really get any optimization out of. We're able to get to the application without having to use DPDK.
So, okay, one of the things you guys have been talking about is application and the focus on application and, you know, layer 7 acceleration and that kind of stuff. Well, I mean, layer 7 acceleration was phrased badly, but, you know, but a focus on layer 7 functionality. Is that, in your mind, a distinctive of how you guys look at traffic flowing through an ADC?
When you talk about layer 7, this is typically where an application delivery controller operates. It lives in the layer 4 to 7 space, and it makes sense because for you to get a real understanding of how the application is performing, how it's behaving, you need to be interoperating with it at that level. As an example, you may ping a server, right? And that server says it's up. Maybe in round trip time is okay. But if you're not actually going to get a login page when you attempt to connect to that server as a user, well, that server should be marked as down. So that's really where the value comes in when you look at application delivery technology, is being able to operate at the application tier and understand and emulate what would happen if an end customer actually tried to access an application service on the back end.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, we really, really need to have a deep understanding of the application. I mean, understanding not only what the application expects, what the expected response time is, you know, what the flows look like, heuristics of these requests. All of this plays into the quality of experience that a user has with that particular service.
So when I'm looking at your website, so as part of researching this, I took a close look at your product, and you're talking about load balancing not just TCP flows, but you're talking about load balancing Exchange or Link or load balancing Microsoft Azure requests or, you know, those types of things. You're not just saying, I'm going to load balance you at layer 4. You're actually going to speak Microsoft Exchange's language when you do the load balancing queries.
Yeah, it's critical. Obviously, the more you know about the application, the better you can serve it and the better you can serve the user that's up the other end. So, you know, getting a really, really deep understanding of that application, you begin to understand sort of the language within each of the payloads. And then you can do some very interesting stuff, such as analytics and path manipulation.
Yeah, you can count quality of email sent instead of bytes passed or something like that, instead of bandwidth used.
Yeah, and you can begin to look at, you can start to do some anomaly recognition and things like that, too, when you start seeing things that are sort of out of baseline, as it were.
And then we're getting into the web application firewall functionality, which I think we'll touch later, but that's a key part because you
actually understand. It's a key part, yeah. It's all layer 7, right.
Once you're looking into layer 7 and decoding the transaction request and response actions going backwards and forwards between the client and the server, now you've got a whole bunch of services that you can build on top of those capabilities. So that's key to understanding where load balancers and application delivery controllers are headed, is that they're all application-centric. They're no longer just, you know, layer 4, they actually work at layer 7.
Correct.
I'm just laughing, thinking about how many people have health checks right now where if you can ping and maybe do a TCP open, it's up.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah. Hackers
be very
love
surprised.
That.
Yeah. I've never done that.
No, not you. Of course not.
None of us have.
Okay, now, Kemp guys, I want to go back to this kernel thing and tie off this conversation. You guys have talked about making deep changes within the kernel that allow you to, is that a scale-focused comment? You know, where you're able to do more application level work because of changes you've made to the kernel that you run in your box?
I think it's a scale function. It's a breadth of capabilities function as well. So, you know, being able to do a lot of stuff that, you know, today you look at it and you go, okay, there's this wide breadth of functionality that you can get within an ADC. Well, if you look historically, that wasn't necessarily the case. So we were able to kind of get ahead of the market in a lot of areas by doing things within kernel and accelerating the performance there versus having to do it in user space.
Okay. And now, again, all of your boxes or all of your platform is x86, period. You don't really need any custom ASICs, and therefore you can run this thing anywhere, which we touched on before, but I don't know that we got through the entire list of places that you can actually run a Kemp ADC. You know, one thing we mentioned here is you and I were preparing for this show early on is hypervisor agnostic. So this will run on ESXi, I assume, you know, in a vSphere environment, but where else?
It'll run in KVM, Hyper-V, Oracle, pretty much you name it, Xen.
You mean you're providing a package that's, you know, designed to run in those environments, or is there kind of some gymnastics you got to go through to get it working?
No, that's the package that we provide. I mean, you go to the site, you select what you want, and you download it, and there you go.
Okay. You know, you also mentioned cloud manager agnostic, which is kind of an interesting one. I want to hear what that one means.
So that plays more into a product that we're releasing very, very shortly. It's actually in internal POC right now. But that has to do with a product that we term Kemp 360. So that is initially a management orchestration monitoring tool. However, the long plan on that is much more advanced.
Okay.
So there's a lot there. And part of that is what you just alluded to, which is tying into the different cloud managers. So Jason's done a tremendous amount of work with VMware to tie into things like vRealize, VCOps, things like that, which could be construed, I mean, as cloud managers, albeit proprietary, but cloud managers. We also tie into OpenStack. So today we tie in as a subordinate, right? So it's really our ADC that's tying in with load balancing as a service, and we're working on GSLB as a service right now. But what we're also doing is development around the north side of OpenStack, which is actually beginning to, you know, tie into things like Heat and CeloMeter and Neutron from the networking perspective, and be able to provide as well as extract information from that cloud management platform in order to do things like provisioning and resiliency and elasticity within those environments, really creating a virtualized, agile cloud environment for application delivery services.
So it sounds like there's bidirectional communication going on here. You must have an API that's being called from these orchestration platforms to tie in, and then vice versa. You guys are reaching out and doing active integration and tying into APIs on the other end as well.
Precisely, yeah. So right now we've got a full library of APIs that can be accessed from anybody. So anything that you can do within the local UI, you can do via API. So it's a full library. And then what we're doing in Kemp 360, obviously, is doing that southbound interface into the cloud management platform so that you get a full solution without, you know, boiling the oceans. So we're not going out and we're not saying, hey, we're a cloud manager. We are, you know, all of your appliances. We are your OVS switch. We are, you know, we're not saying that. What we're saying is we know where we have strengths. Our strengths are layer 7. Our strengths are monitoring, management, analytics, things like that. We're going to play in every environment that we can play in, as long as is it's what the customers need.
That's part of that partnerships that we see. So Kemp's partnering with, you know, NSX, Cisco ACI, all those other people who are making SDN platforms, so that your load balancer will be a part of that network capability.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. So, I mean, at the end of the day, like we've been saying, we were application-centric. We need to bring value to the application and to the customer accessing those applications.
Equally, just note that those SDN platforms have load balancing, but not application load balancing. They do network load balancing. They could load balance over links or load balance flows, but they can't do application load balancing. So make sure when you're looking at your SDN, you don't get the two confused, which is a common mistake people make.
Exactly. Right. And it goes to our ubiquity story. The point is we're not looking to own the infrastructure, but we're looking to be able to slot in and add value regardless of the type of infrastructure choices that the customer makes. We've already proven that with the platform ubiquity, having our own dedicated hardware for when that's needed, being able to run on the customer's hardware, hypervisors, as well as cloud from this kind of management perspective, slotting into platforms and frameworks like vRealize, System Center. And then from the SDN perspective, again, having that support for these environments so that we can add value even though we're not looking to own the infrastructure part ourselves.
Now, you guys mentioned the orchestration platform OpenStack, which we talk about a lot on the show. It comes up frequently, folks integrating with OpenStack. What about the SDN controller OpenDaylight? Is that interesting to Kemp?
Yeah, that's a great segue into what we're doing with SDN. So last March, March of 14, we began work on developing something that we call SDN Adaptive. So let me just walk really quickly through that. What SDN Adaptive does is it really brings that layer 4.7 element into the SDN environment. If you look at SDN
just back up 1 second. Okay, so we've got a Kemp ADC. We've got Kemp 360, which is another orchestration tool that you haven't quite released yet. And now you're talking about SDN Adaptive, which is a concept or an actual a product?
I apologize. Yes. So that is actually a functionality or a feature set within the load balancers, within the ADC. It's already there today. It's GA. It's available. You can throw it into your favorite SDN environment today. So with regard to controllers, let me first just kind of walk through the premise for SDN for those that aren't super familiar with it, and then kind of where we play. So SDN, the original premise for SDN was really to separate control and data plane. It was to have a central communications interface, southbound interface between the two, so that you could basically create a programmable infrastructure. All right, so super, super, 10,000 foot level. So the controllers that are fairly common out there today, Open Daylight, like you mentioned, HP VAN, Onos is beginning to get some traction. And then I won't go into the multitude of others that are out there because they're either dying on the vine or are already dead. But with regard to ODL, it's starting to get a lot of traction. We do work with ODL. We work with both ODL and the HP VAN controller today. And a lot of people ask, well, why'd you go with VAN? Well, originally, when we started the development, that was really the only operational controller that we not only had a device that we could interface with, but we had a development organization that we could work hand in hand with and learn with as we begin to, go on this SDN journey.
Yeah, so VAN wasn't a long-term play necessarily, but certainly they were first to market with a functional controller and applications you could run on it and so on, which was the impetus for you to say, yeah, let's do this with VAN.
Yeah, precisely. And as a matter of fact, their long play is ODL as well.
Yeah.
So, it was a perfect marriage because that was our long play. So we started the work on VAN. We did ODL about a release behind, and we've done that consistently, really because ODL has been a little bit slower to come around for some of the functionality that we needed. Things like maps, being able to see the landscape and pull that information in. So what we do with SDN Adaptive is really fourfold. First, we have something that's called passive port. And what passive port does is it just says, hey, on that last egress switch port, that last port that's going to the service, the hosted application that you're trying to access, we're going to monitor that port. And if there's any congestion on that port, we're going to affect the value that we place on the service running on the associated server that particular application is running on. In other words, we're going to degrade that service, and we're not going to load balance via that port to that service until that congestion condition clears. Now, obviously, in load balancing environment, you have more than one host running those services. This isn't a hit. It's actually an increase to the quality of experience for the user because they don't hit that congestion point, which means they don't have retransmissions and things like that, which obviously fill up the pipe even more and degrade their response even more.
I mean, you can control the outbound in that sense. You couldn't control the inbound necessarily, though?
Actually, we are, and so let me kind of explain that. So where we're getting that information, that congestion information, is from the controller. So the ADC is actually talking via the northbound interface, the REST API, into the controller, and we're pulling all the port statistics from that controller. And so we have virtually real-time information on congestion within the environment. Now, in that particular, what we term mode one, which is passive port, all we were looking at is that one port. The next release that we did was passive path. Now we're looking at the entire path. And we're doing the same thing there. So, the controller creates a path that a given flow is going to go through from, ingress to the data center to the service itself. So what we're able to do is look at those paths and go, okay, wait a minute, we've got congestion here, we've got congestion there. That's probably not the best path for us to forward packets through to that given service. So again, what we do is we avoid that by degrading the backend server. So that allows us to effectively avoid those congestion points. Now, understand, I never said that we went to the controller and dictated anything. This was all passive. We're just pulling the information, and then we're making decisions about the back-end flow from that information that we're gaining.
You're assuming you've got a multitude of pool members to choose from that maybe are scattered across the data center, such that there's be a completely unique path that's not congested that you could use to service that request. And so to kind of force that around, you degrade the server that's got the congested path, so you're not going to be sending traffic to it. Traffic isn't going to traverse that congested path now.
That's exactly right. So interesting side benefit to this that we didn't actually discover until we had a production customer, and that is you're able to effectively identify east-west traffic congestion. So this obviously is a problem. If you listen to the Googles and the Facebooks of the world, they're saying 80-90% of their traffic is east-west. That's really hard to identify. So with this particular application, because we're pulling that information about the entire environment, we're able to see where these congestion points are. And what we've done within our UI then is create a mapping, a visual mapping of a congested data path. So now you see switch port to switch port to switch port. It builds a map and it shows you those congestion points. Very, very helpful when you start looking at repetitive congestion situations where east-west traffic seems to be really, really heavy between two particular services.
Well, it's also kind of there's some interesting design implications there as well, because if you tend to like to put a bunch of the pool members in the same spot where all your traffic to hit all pool members is going to come in over the same path, you need to rethink how you would be laying out a set of services like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it gives you that visibility that I think in the past you really didn't have. I mean, it was really spitballs on the wall before with design. And now we can see that, hey, you know what? I didn't expect this level of traffic between these services, but we seem to be getting it, and it does seem to be impacting the switch environment. So, you know, that helps you with architectural design and the network, the applications. It also helps you with capacity planning. So some interesting side benefits that we derived from the passive path stuff. Now, what we're doing right now, and we're pretty much through the rapid prototyping phase, is quality of service. So now we're actually taking those AQs that are traditionally in switches, we're utilizing OpenFlow, and we're beginning to more dynamically prioritize traffic. So again, this is application-centric, right? We understand what applications are the highest priority. Let's say it's a link call or, you know, some live video call, whatever. That's obviously going to have a higher priority than email. So what we're able to do is identify that traffic, again, in the VIP. And then if we see that there's a flow that needs to have higher priority that maybe by default wouldn't, we can place a call into the controller then and request that particular set of queues be prioritized for that particular flow.
And then you just mark the traffic outbounds that it hits those queues.
We do the DSCP mark that's going to hit those queues and push it forward.
You said OpenFlow at a second. I was like, wait a minute. I thought you guys weren't doing any writing. But in fact, you're actually making a call to the controller. The controller is going to use OpenFlow southbound to set up that rule and service that particular queue in the way that you've requested.
Yeah, again, otherwise you conflict with the controllers, right? So you can't go and do anything necessarily directly with the devices, even if we spoke OpenFlow. That would cause a lot of conflicts in your network. So you kind of still have to have the controller be sort of the center of the universe.
Of course, right. Those switches are only going to authenticate to one controller anyway. So yeah.
Yeah, but you can begin to see the value that could come out of this from a Layer 4.7 perspective. Even though, you know, originally the programmable network was looked at as layer 2.3 with the ability to access the RESTful API, the northbound interface, the applications now have a lot more say in what's going on within the network and, you know, where flows go, when they go, at what priority they go. We could never do that before, but we really act as a proxy to the network on behalf of the applications.
And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, the network is there to serve the application anyway. So again, with our technology, we have the best understanding of the needs of the application. We're the point of ingress to the application services in the back end, and the point of egress of responses that are going back to the client. Just to keep building on that example earlier of voice versus email, typically voice is going to have the highest priority. But I come from working in the finance industry, and we'd have times every month where we would do these enormous email blasts of research to our customers. And guess what would happen? We'd start getting complaints of slowness. So in that scenario, you may actually want to borrow unused bandwidth because maybe your call volume at that point is down and start to share that over to the email queues. With the way that networks are typically architected and the technologies that exist, it's not very easy to borrow unused bandwidth from different lanes. And with what Mike's talking about, that's really the challenge that, or one of the challenges that we're looking to solve.
We're talking about leveraging the network programmability aspect of it here. And it sounds like there's a couple of things going on. One, you're using the controller and talking to an application on the controller to pull data. So that's actually something I'm curious about. What application are you talking to specifically?
Are you talking about the back-end applications?
So you as Kemp are hitting the controller, and there's got to be some app on the controller that you're pulling data from. If it's ODL, it could be one of a bunch of different modules, or it could be something you, Kemp, installed on the controller yourself?
No. So we are the application, right? So we are the application above the controller. So we're really playing a dual role here as we sit today. Now, again, kind of keep Kemp 360 in mind because some of the functionality then, added functionality, evolves into Kemp 360 for even further administrative control. But if you look at it today, we are the application. That's why I mentioned we proxy the application service that might be on the back end. Because, again, we have a deep understanding of Link, for instance. We have a deep understanding of SharePoint, you know, Oracle, whatever the application happens to be. So we understand its needs. And then we issue commands to the controller via REST API to actually make those priority changes within the switch environment. So there is no other application. We're actually using the functionality that the controller has. Again, whether it's VAN or ODL, those are the two that we've proven work. Mm-hmm. So the functionality that's within them, the capabilities that OpenFlow provides us, and then what the switches, what capability the switches have, that's what we're taking advantage of. And we are actually the intelligence. We are the application.
Got it. Okay.
Now, I want to point out something here. As part of preparing for this, I realized that you're also not just doing it for OpenStack, you're also doing it for VMware's platforms. You have integration with vRealize Operations Management, you're integrated with vCloud Air, and you've got VMware plugins for Log Insight Management. So everything that you said about, you know, being a part of the OpenStack ecosystem, you're equally a part of the VMware ecosystem too?
Absolutely. Like I said, Jason and his team have been doing a tremendous amount of work there over a long period of time. And so we're fully integrated with VMware, and we're working right now on the NSX aspect of it. So yes, full VMware. We're also working with Microsoft. So, you know, doing Microsoft System Center integration. As you guys know, they're going through some pretty heavy transitions right now to try and transition things to an Azure-based environment. So I've been working with their networking team on some of the SDN ideas that they have. And so there's a real good possibility that we'll do some integration with them there as well. Now, they just released TP3, which is obviously very early with regard to the SDN stuff. So between now and April of 16, we should have some pretty significant developments there as well.
So I guess the point I wanted to I'm taking away from that is that if I'm going to strategize around the Kemp load balancing technology, and for an enterprise, it is a big commitment. You're talking about a 5 to 10 year horizon for these products. Mm-hmm. You guys are not just, you know, we do it in open daylight, open stack type thing. You're actually saying, you want to put it on VMware? We've got that. We're working with Microsoft as their strategy emerges. Wasn't that good of me to be where they're going to be? So you're partnering with them, and you've also got, weirdly, Oracle and SAP integration, so if you want to have that. So it's not you live alone, you are having a full spectrum of partnerships, not just, you know, open daylight, open stack, is right across the board, which I found eye-opening.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the new horizon, right? I mean, I think that, you know, these companies that try and go it alone are really isolating themselves because there is a multitude of choices. And that's exactly what the customers have been calling for the last 20 years. So they're starting to get that now. But what they still need, especially the enterprise, is it needs to be somewhat packaged. So it needs to be sort of clear where the delineations are and where the connections are. And so that's what we're really striving for is, yeah, you have all these partnerships, but it needs to be easy to consume from a customer's perspective. So, you know, we focus on open, yes. We focus on interoperability with the leaders, yes. But we're also looking at value-added solutions as well and really packaging those so that customers don't have to, you know, scratch their heads for too long on how things pull together.
Yeah, the point is different customers have different needs. If we took that route of just aligning ourselves with one partner, we would limit the customers that we could serve. And that's really, again, goes back to that ubiquity strategy. How you want to run, where you want to run, and what you want us to interoperate with, we want to make sure we have the options available.
All right. So just because I haven't heard of Kemp Load Balancer before, perhaps, as you know, some part of our audience won't have, doesn't mean that you haven't necessarily, you know, you've been around for many, many years and you've got the partnerships in place that, you know, that put you on a par.
Yeah. I mean, Jason didn't mention it just because he's humble, but we are the number three.
This is no
shipping
space for humble.
It is a, we are number three. So we are number three shipping ADC with regard to units shipped. So a lot of people don't know us, you know, probably because of the area we focused. But, yeah, we do have the number three shipments in the industry. Yeah,
so that's about 9% of all ADC shipped is a Kemp Loadmaster.
Hmm. Yep.
I want to go back to something we were talking about earlier because that we didn't cover. We were talking about being able to detect physical path using open flow to influence what's going on in a congested path and, you know, send traffic elsewhere. But a lot of networks that have SDN controllers and stuff, they're probably virtualized their network and they got some kind of an overlay going on. How do you deal with that world?
Right. So that's a little more challenging if you look at like an NSX environment, right? Because that's a fairly closed environment and you tend to rely more on their controller or their manager to pull information and make decisions around that. So what we're able to do today is we're able to look at the underlay and we're able to make the load balancing decisions, as I mentioned, like for mode two, you know, passive path sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. With regard to the overlay, what we're doing is working with NSX right now to get the APIs from the manager so that we can then begin to extract that overlay information and feed intelligence back into the manager. So if you start looking at it, being able to understand what's going on with the overlay and the underlay, you can really bring some value to that environment, because that's one of the struggles that they have in overlay environments is that they can't necessarily see what's going on with the underlay. So we are in a position, especially with our intelligence of the underlay and the fact that we're layer 4.7, that we can begin to kind of match those two together and then provide intelligence on situations. Let's say a port on a switch goes down. The overlay is not going to know that. The overlay is end to end. So it's going to know it may, if the port is on an edge device, if the port's on a host, they'll know it. If it's somewhere in the middle, there's probably going to be failures before they know it. So if we can recognize that and provide that intelligence to, say, the manager or even a controller, depending upon the environment, then we bring that level of notification that currently isn't there. So we're looking at that as a value add.
Yeah, because a big challenge is that you will wind up making decisions in the overlay without an understanding of the actual physics of what's going on in the underlay, and that can lead to performance and UX problems. Something else that we're working on is bringing in understanding of overlay technologies directly into our product stack, such as VXLAN and NVGRE, which will help us to bridge that gap a bit.
But what we're saying here is the overlay element and correlating the overlay tunnels with the physical underlay carrying those tunnels isn't something that Kemp does today, but we're getting there?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what we're working on right now.
Okay.
So NSX is one of the first targets. ACI and some of the stuff that they're doing would be secondary, as would Microsoft. So we have to start some way, so we're starting with NSX.
Okay. All right. So now let me ask another more of an operational, practical kind of question. This all sounds great. How hard is it to drop Kemp into my environment and, you know, and use it from a, you know, from an NFV perspective? I'm guessing you guys maybe have more demand for a virtualized ADC than a hardware appliance these days. If I want to put this in my environment, how much pain am I in for? Don't lie to me.
From a network virtualization perspective, that's the beauty of it, in my opinion. It's very, very easy to slot into an existing environment, so a traditional environment. And then it allows you the opportunity to evolve or migrate to a fully virtualized environment, whether that's NFV, and SDN, you know, whatever the buzzword is you want to throw out there. But we're able to, as long as you've got an x86 within that environment, because of the nature of an ADC being a layer 7 destination, we're going to be a destination anyway. So you're going to be pointing IP toward us, not toward the backend service. So let's say you have an existing, I know we keep harping on Microsoft, let me just say you have an existing Exchange environment and you want to begin to migrate that to a fully virtualized environment. You could deploy a Kemp load balancer with Exchange templates within the environment. You could do that within 15 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes, have that up and operational, then begin to move Exchange instances behind that service, bring up the VIP that would represent those particular servers, and you've now got, and then obviously tie it, if you want to tie it into SDN, you would tie it into the SDN simply by clicking SDN controller within the UI, and it would now talk to a controller. And really, the basic deployment is that simple.
The magic checkbox you were just talking about there would accomplish what for me?
What that allow you to do is say, hey, I want to run in an SDN environment. So by clicking that box within the UI, then the load balancer then goes out and looks for available controllers. And then it'll bring back those controllers. So let's say you had ODL and VAN, and for that particular Exchange domain, you wanted to run only ODL. Then you would select the ODL controller as your primary controller. And now you're going to begin to talk to that ODL controller.
Which means I can now gather data from the controller and, you know, leverage that intelligence that we were talking about, the SDN adaptive?
Correct.
Okay.
Basically, a customer can purchase our technology for simple deployment, like Mike mentioned, Exchange, SharePoint, Link, what have you. And they're using that in the kind of traditional mode. But if they want to start doing some exploration, some testing, they can simply publish a dedicated service on that same appliance, regardless of its form factor, and have that service taking advantage of the SDN adaptive technology where you're using statistics that you're pulling from the NBI of a controller. So to your question about how painful it is, it's very painless because even as you start to evolve and take advantage of things such as SDN, you can use the exact same technology because we've packaged these capabilities into our core product. And it really is as simple as ticking a checkbox and making a couple of configuration changes. You don't have to go through a rip and replace when you say, now we want to start playing with SDN, now we want to start testing it out.
Okay, kind of a crawl, walk, run then.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's what's being termed bimodal IT today, right? Where you have kind of your mode one data center, you're doing your traditional way of doing things, and you have mode two, which is a bit more exploratory, and they're normally running in parallel. At some point in the future, mode two is going to become mode one. We said we want to have as much value as customers are starting to do this testing and evaluation of technology such as SDN and NFV, and we found that packaging it this way just makes it very easy and consumable and pretty pain-free.
And we've got a production use case of this as well at Deltian College, which I'm sure you've seen the use case. But anyway, how that evolved was exactly the conversation we're having right now, where they had a Cisco network. And unfortunately, that is a rip and replace because it's got to be an open flow environment, right? So they had a bunch of really old switches that they had to refresh anyway. What they did is ripped and replaced that with HP open flow switches. And then obviously the controller, they already had Kemp in their environment. So all they had to do for us is upgrade the code. And by upgrading the code, they had the SDN capability. They were able to turn it on, start talking with the controller, and they're up and operational. And they've got a Link, SharePoint, and Exchange environment with 15,000 users. So it was seamless from Kemp's perspective.
It's actually a really good practical operations question since you mentioned, you know, upgrading in the context of, you know, getting some additional features in there. Do I deploy Kemp Loadmasters in a cluster or an active standby pair and then go through an upgrade that should be hitless, I assume, or how does that work?
So the upgrade's hitless. I'm going to let Jason talk a little bit about the scalability because we have a really fun product, functionality that's coming out that talks to that.
So historically, our products were typically deployed in active hot standby mode. So exactly what you mentioned, if you were doing an upgrade, you'd upgrade one of the nodes at a time. But obviously, to support the way that people are typically deploying their infrastructure, the fact that they want elasticity and be able to scale very easily, we've also introduced in clustering capabilities into the product, which allows you to put multiple nodes into a single cluster. They behave and act as one system, so you will then get the aggregate benefit of the bandwidth and the throughput and the SSL transaction per seconds and capabilities of all of the products that are participating in that cluster. Obviously, the advantage there is maintaining the investment that you've already put into that infrastructure if you come to a point where you've outgrown it. Because now all you need to do is add another unit or two to that cluster as opposed to ripping out what you have and bring in something bigger.
Now that sounds like a physical appliance deployment to me. If I'm doing an NFV deployment, would I still build out clusters or would I just build out a lot of micro instances?
It depends. It depends on what it is that you're doing and how you're architecting your infrastructure. We do have that across all form factors. So we do have it for our physical appliances, of course, but that equally applies for our virtual appliances or for bare metal. The point is, what do you need in terms of a capacity point of view? If you're doing micro instances, if you're doing per application instances, then it's likely not something that you're going to need. But if you're investing in moving to a virtualization infrastructure, but you haven't moved to that kind of micro instance deployment model, then you may need scale. You just want it in a virtual or software package. So again, it goes back to just having the option to deploy however the customer needs to.
Yeah, and let me throw a plug in for KIM 360 again, because that's one of the areas that KIM 360 is going to be focused on with regard to automation and elasticity, is especially in the micro instances. Being able to monitor that environment, not only the capacity that's occurring on the virtual instance itself, but if it's running within a virtualized environment, say a VMware environment or OpenStack, having that northbound relationship with those cloud managers that we talked about earlier, and being able to pull capacity, whether it's CPU, it's memory, it's I/O, and be able to really monitor those levels and then correlate them against what we're seeing on the virtual appliance, we can then begin to make decisions around provisioning of additional capacity. And we can do that proactively instead of reactively based on specific policies that are set within KIM 360. And those policies could actually be in response to, say, an intent-based SLA that you've created. That's populated that policy database. So there's a lot coming within KIM 360 that's going to address a lot of these operational challenges that we're seeing today.
I want to flip the conversation a little here about we need to head into the closing this down so that we can get to the final part here. But we were talking earlier about how there being a CapEx component to the real world of software-defined networking that no one talks about. And I just wanted to drill into that and bring that back to light. What are you talking mean by that?
Yeah, so that's an underlay issue, right? If you look at what traditional SDN, I'm not talking about NSX, I'm not talking about Cisco, although there's a significant CapEx event there as well. But within traditional SDN with OpenFlow, you have to support OpenFlow. The switch infrastructure needs to support OpenFlow. So if it doesn't, you're going to have a front-end CapEx event. So you see a lot of these guys out there marketing that, hey, it's a CapEx savings, yada, yada, yada. It's not a CapEx savings, not up front. Absolutely, there is an OpEx savings there.
You're saying something really huge here, actually. You're saying you've got to have switches that support OpenFlow, which a lot of people in the industry would say, no, you don't. There's other ways we can program those forwarding tables. OpenFlow is going to die.
Yeah.
You're planting the flag on OpenFlow, eh?
I'm saying that OpenFlow is got the loudest voice right now. And to ignore it, I think, is a fool's game. So is it the only solution? Absolutely not. But right now, it's got the loudest voice. It's what we're seeing the largest uptake on. And as a vendor, you kind of want to follow the money. So with regard to OpenFlow, versus NetComp and Yang versus, this thing and the other thing, right now the loudest voice, at least from traditional SDN's perspective goes, is OpenFlow.
And I mean, either way, OpenFlow or not, it still is an upfront cost.
It is. I mean, you've got to have the capabilities within the switch.
And you have to have the capabilities in-house. I mean, moving to SDN is a cost, right? Long-term, there can be savings, but I'd likely have to make some changes to my network infrastructures, and I've got to make sure I have the know-how in my team. Kind of circling back to what we're doing, we see the value that we're bringing as somewhat of a catalyst, right? The point is you're going to put this investment into this architecture, into this infrastructure, into having the talent. How do you extract the most out of it for what the network is actually there for in the first place, which is the application?
Precisely. This all comes down to applications. That's the key here. The programmable network below that SDN environment, that's a vehicle for the applications.
What?
I mean, that's really...
Wait, no, it's just cool. You're supposed to do it for its own sake.
Well, unfortunately, that's what's caused it to take so long to evolve.
But if I just plug my switches in, they just work, right? That's how we do it today. Yeah. They just plug them in and they... No, come on. It's no... I mean, you're overloading it a little bit. I mean, the answer is sure. If you're going to implement a flow-based network, whether you're using OpenFlow or you're going to use an overlay or whether you're going to use a Cisco ACI custom silicon, you know, special magic proprietary closed type, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. What I'm reading from what you're saying is you can get in there and do more if OpenFlow's there, but you've still got solutions that will integrate with other things anyway. And
yeah, that's precisely it. I mean, if tomorrow... Protocol Z comes out and that ends up being the southbound interface or that ends up being the control interface from the virtual network services, we're going to have it.
Well, Mike, I think we should highlight that we don't care that much.
No, we don't. We're again, let's go back to the ubiquity model. I mean, that's Kemp's, that's our MO.
Yeah.
And we
you've got to be with everybody because otherwise you're betting on someone to win.
Right.
You know, you can't bet on OpenFlow to win, you know, or but abandon all Cisco ACI customers, or
This is the biggest transition our industry's seen in 25 years, probably. Mm. So yes. Betting on one vendor is, again, it's a fool's game. Don't do it.
And I mean, the point for us, back to Mike's earlier point, is that we are an app. We're talking to the controller on the NBI. So today, yeah, the controllers that we're working with are using OpenFlow primarily for the SBI, but. Yeah. We don't care. If they go to NetConf and that becomes the standard, if it's Yang, if it's whatever, it doesn't really matter because of where we operate. Again, back to our earlier point, we're living in that layer 4 to 7 app space.
That's right. Now, the thing here to note is that a customer, that means if you're buying a Kemp load balancer and you bet down on HP VAN today, and then at some point in the future you decide that that's not the right solution for your organization, something changes, maybe your organization changes, maybe the product changes, you can still keep your Kemp and move forward.
So, absolutely. It even gets better than that. If that controller goes away, we default back to non-SDN mode. You don't do anything. We just keep operating. That's the beauty of the platform.
And just to make that super, super crisp, let's say you have an application service published, and the SDN controller dies, there's some communication issue, even then we will dynamically fail back to an alternate method so that the service still remains active regardless of what problems may be happening on the controller front.
Okay, where can the audience learn more about Kemp?
KempTechnologies.com. You can follow us on Twitter at KempTech.
And most importantly, test drives. Now, we're all getting very fond of our remote labs and ability to do things with software. Have we got a choice there?
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got, you can go to freeloadbalancer.com. Yep. We've got a limited version there that you can download. It's free. There's no time limit. You can use it at will. A 20 meg throttle?
Yep.
Okay, is that the only crippling feature, I guess, is throughput?
Throughput and TPS. So we're 20 megs. So the freeload balancer is 20 megs of throughput and 50 SSL TPS. We do also facilitate trials of higher capacity products as well.
So they can always contact you via the website to get that type of information.
Yeah, it actually even gets easier than that. You can go to the website and under resources, you can download the image that you choose on your own.
What about you guys individually? Do you have Twitter handles or blogs or anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, so I'm at M. Warland for Twitter. Jason is at Jay's Dover.
Yep, that's J-A-Y-S Dover, D-O-V-E-R.
And then, of course, we're both on LinkedIn as well. Jason Dover and Mike Warland.
I know I've connected with at least Jason, and I'll look you up on LinkedIn too, Mike. Well, Great. Thanks a lot for coming on the show, and thanks to Kemp for sponsoring the show today. Greg, any parting points you wanted to make as we close the show out?
Yeah, the integration. So one of the things that impressed me as I was preparing for this show was the fact that Kemp is not just working with one partner. It seems to be working with all of them. So in an enterprise data center where my load balancer needs to work with a lot of different things it needs to sit in front of, Microsoft, VMware, Hyper-V, Cisco platforms, and then it's also got application awareness. It's all listed on their website. If you're interested, you could show and get some more about that. But that impressed me off the cuff. And the second one is that it's software-centric, not a hardware-centric load balancer, and that gives me a higher level of confidence to undertake a proof of concept around it, because I feel that load balancers that have come from a pedigree of software, pure software, that's where they started from, are going to be better for us in the long run than ones that have to make a transition from hardware.
Yeah, points that I noticed were there's a lot of issues about SDN architecture and long-term exactly how we're going to get that work done yet to be answered. And so, you know, the smart money says, don't throw your eggs all in one basket just yet. You gotta follow the money. You got to follow what your business and applications need and can benefit from today, and then look to a solution that's not going to lock you in today for the long term, because things are just moving and changing far too quickly. So, to all of you in the audience, thanks for listening to the show this week. You can follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers. You can email us at packetpushers@gmail.com. If you'd like to talk to us about this specific show with Kemp, don't forget to stop by packetpushers.net, find the accompanying blog post for the show, and then leave a comment. We'll do our best to respond or have one of these fine folks from Kemp answer your questions. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.